Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. Have accessed entry 577 PR1413, certificate number 42615. Heil, honey, I'm home.
Heil, honey.
Heil, honey.
Heil, honey.
Heil, honey.
Heil, honey.
Hello,
I'm home. Heil, honey.
Heil, honey.
Smile, honey. Because I'm home. Gee, it's great to be Top Gun, but it's nothing like the fun that I get when I say hi, oh honey, I am home.
In 1990, a British TV channel,
hi, oh honey, I'm home,
produced a new situation comedy that combined everyone's two favorite things, comedy and Hitler. Two great tastes that taste great together, I guess. And produced Heil Honey, I'm Home with a 13-episode commitment. They were going to run this all winter. 13 episodes, like in the UK, think about it.
That's a lot.
That would make it the longest-running show in British television history.
That's more than The Office, right?
Yeah, Office is, I think, 12 shows plus specials. Fawlty Towers, I think, is just 2 6-episode seasons. So they were confident that Hitler would be more than twice as popular as either Ricky Gervais or Basil Fawlty.
So this is a domestic comedy where Hitler is effectively the dad.
You can get all that from the title, right?
Heil, honey, I'm home. And honey is Eva Braun in this story?
Have you seen this? It's like you're pitching me all these great ideas, but they're already in the show, John.
Or is honey Blondie the Blondie, honey's the German dog. Shepherd?
Hitler did have a dog named Blondie. That's true. Probably with an umlaut. I don't know.
Blondie.
Blondie. That's my favorite. My favorite death metal band.
Blondie.
There probably is some terrible Aryan skinhead band name for Hitler's dog.
I wonder if there is. If there isn't, there ought to be.
It's true.
But listen, I don't think we have any white supremacists listening to this show.
Well, we're speaking to the future in which all race has been erased.
Right. There won't be such a thing as white.
It's either been erased by, some natural disaster that killed off every race, the meteor or whatever.
Right.
Or just by aggressive sex.
Sure. Interbreeding.
Not aggressive sex, but, widespread, joyful interracial mingling.
I think, speaking to future listeners, there's a general consensus among those of us who are not against this idea that just the growing internationalism of our species will eventually produce a sort of unified or general mochaccino-ness to all humans. We'll all be basically the color of milky coffee.
And there's even the sense, I think, unless you're some terrible purist.
Anti-misogynist.
Misogynist? Is that the word? It sounds like misogynist, so it can't be right.
It's got to be misogynist, right?
I guess.
miscegenation.
If you're against miscegenation. So unless you're some kind of angry weirdo with a shotgun, there's some idea that not only will we all inevitably wind up at this color, but that it's the most beautiful color, that we all look the best at this color. And, you know, humanity has just been one long sexual contest.
Yeah.
Trying to arrive at this perfect South Pacific Island tan.
You know? Right. There is an argument, and it used to be a delightful one, although now in our current day, pre-apocalypse, no one can take any joy in America anymore. It doesn't seem like it all has to just be ugly. But we used to believe that America was a melting pot and that that was one of the wonderful things about it.
We would literally be melting and we'd be bragging about it. Like, it's so good, we're all going to melt.
Yeah, melting into one another. I melt with you was our...
by modern English?
By modern English.
That was the national anthem for a brief period in the 80s.
It really was.
A lot of people don't know that. I'll stop.
Because America was the place first, I think, like outside of Paris, maybe, where the greatest number of people from the greatest number of countries around the world had an opportunity to mix and mingle. New York City was the first real, truly international city.
And I guess it worked.
It worked.
People didn't, you know, on some level, didn't mind having Irish and Italians and whatnot.
Right.
People
were, eventually.
You know, after many, many brutal deaths. But
the Irish were the police and the Italians were the criminals, and then they fell in love.
It's a beautiful Romeo and Juliet story.
Yeah.
No, wait, what is the archetype for that, where the criminal falls in love with the...
Oh, it's the Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes, it's The Fugitive, where Tommy Lee Jones marries Harrison Ford at the end.
There it is.
In my supercut in my head.
Tommy Lee Jones being the Irish.
Because he's extremely Irish in that movie. Yeah. I don't care, he says. I want a hard target search of every hen house, outhouse, and rainbow, where me lucky charms might be.
Oh, big ocean, me gora. But now, and this is one of the ways, futurelings, that we can tell we're close to the apocalypse, this is no longer a fun narrative for a large portion of our country. Now we're trying to separate all these lovers again.
Trying to pull Tommy Lee Jones off of Harrison Ford.
Yeah, taking the Irish cops and putting them back in their Irish cop neighborhoods. And the Italians go back into their little corrals. And the
Do not cross the tracks to the gangster neighborhood, charming Irish apple-stealing cop.
Yeah, we're gonna keep away from that mochaccino color and go back to being a bunch of Crayolas in a box.
The melting pot is kind of unfashionable on all sides, right?
Like, right now.
Like, if you're an angry racist, the last thing you want to see is your daughter marrying one of them.
And if you're an angry liberal, you do not want to...
Yeah, the idea that my beautiful Senegalese background might be lost into the sea of Americanness is also kind of off-putting.
Right. On the left, we want all the cultures to be sort of maintained in their...
pristine museum mint condition.
Right, where there's no more obligation to become American and to learn English and to adopt American traditions, because those are all the result of white hegemony.
And you know, and something would be lost, like Tears and Rain.
Right, the ancient songs of my people.
Sure, if my neighbors don't make that amazing smelling Middle Eastern food anymore, but instead, you know, they just open a can of chili or whatever. Like, what did we do?
Right.
We broke my amazing Middle Eastern neighbors.
Well, so here we are, the last remnant of this dying breed of people that still believe in America and still believe in a melting pot. And I mean...
And we're speaking to an audience for which it's entirely irrelevant.
Well, who knows? We may be speaking to futurelings that are truly the inevitable result of this intermixing, where they feel like the balalaika and two turntables and a microphone are both part of their inheritance, and they don't remember it being the balalaika being an instrument of the Russians and two turntables and a microphone being the instrument of Los Angeles, California.
I do like to
or Brooklyn, New York.
That is now the state song of California. I do like to imagine that we're speaking to a future that shares all my values, you know, that we're just happen to be living in some what's the word for like a hiatus? Isn't there some term for this?
Interregnum.
An interregnum. Thank you, John. For being my thesaurus. Like, we're just living in some interregnum period.
Thank you, my fat chicken
friend. Where my views are temporarily unfashionable, but clearly they will be vindicated in time. And I would like to speak to...
Well, I feel like some of this stuff is just inevitable. You cannot maintain a world in which cultures do not intermix.
It's just not going to happen.
It's not possible because you raise a kid and his best friend is from Somalia and the best friend brings some Somalian stuff and says, hey, this is one of the fun things about growing up in my house. And the kid is like, that sounds great. And pretty soon they're sharing. It's just the whole nature of putting people together in one place.
Sure. All these things only get maintained if nobody ever meets a Somalian or your kids don't have any friends that are gay or trans or Ukrainian or... You know, whatever. Those are the three categories that sprang to mind.
Gay,
please check
trans,
one box.
Or
gay, trans, Ukrainian. You can only be one of the three.
Yeah. We want to encourage kids to be friends with each other, but in doing so...
Yeah, ignorance is the only thing keeping a lot of these barriers up, keeping the cop neighborhood away from the mafioso neighborhood.
You can't do it because the Italian girl is going to see the Irish boy across that fence, and they're going to want to be together, just like in Goodfellas.
Probably the other way around. I want to see the Italian boy with the Irish lass, the Irish Colleen.
The Colleen.
one might say. Romeo and Colleen. Have we gotten pretty far afield from the idea of a sitcom about the Führer?
No, I think that this is all in keeping. I mean,
these are the themes of the pilot episode.
There was a time, and I think 1990 is a very interesting moment in history, right? Because it's immediately post... the fall of the Berlin Wall. It's immediately post the sort of initial reconciliation between East and West, but we're still in this weird, I mean, there is still a Soviet Union in 1990. It hasn't completely dissolved.
But that almost makes it a more utopian time because we don't know what terrible oligarchy is about to follow. I remember that time as just like, I can't believe it. We're living in this paradise where everything seems to be going the right way for a change.
Well, remember, it was called the end of history.
The end of history. Thank goodness we don't have all those wars and worries of wars anymore.
Yeah, you know, Fukuyama is still out there writing books and... positing things.
He hangs out with the Dow 30,000 guy.
Is that right?
No, I don't know. I like to imagine them just writing instantly discredited books all the time. Just as soon as they send it, like he's sending his editor like, I predict that a 80s real estate scam artist will never be president. And like the day he sends it, it's out of date.
Yeah, right. I mean, think about that. He wrote The End of History. Everyone quoted him for like 2 years.
Sadly, that book was published on September 10th, 2001 at 11:59.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
But so, I mean, this was a moment, I guess, where someone pitching a sitcom where Hitler is turned into a caricature.
Let's talk a little about what the caricature was before
we get
into the historical
setup. So I've never seen
the
show, so lay it on me.
It's set in a Berlin apartment building in 1938, where Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun live together, are living as just a normal domestic lifestyle. He goes off every day to work at the Reichstag, and she stays home and makes, some German dish?
Stuffed.
Latkes?
No, labor canoodle.
Yes, she stays home and makes...
labor canoodle.
Labor canoodle, a thing you may have just made up. I'm not sure.
No, labor canoodle
Wurst.
Is it?
Doesn't she make Wurst and and Spätzle?
Spätzle.
It's a very Spätzle episode.
Kyle, honey, me.
What did I do now?
Oh, tonight you were making schnitzel. What a joke.
You must be real mad at me, honey. I'm a very, very bad Hitler. Come here, babe.
Don't touch me. You've been late for your dinner every night this week.
Ava, babe, please. I'm the Fuhrer.
And they have two neighbors, the Goldensteins, who are, in the pilot, never pointedly Jewish.
Right.
But they're called the Goldensteins.
Goldensteins.
And in subsequent never-aired episodes, that becomes a plot point.
Arnie Goldenstein, you are a slob. Whatever happened to the glamour? Where did the romance go?
How do I know where you put things? I can't even find my shirts.
Having them called the Goldensteins is very offensive to me in my 21st century oversensitivity. I'm just mad about it.
Is there a list of Jewish last names that are not overly Jewish that they could have gone
because
with?
Because Gold is a Jewish surname, and Goldenstein just feels like...
It's gilding the lily.
It is.
It's gelting the lily. It's a little much.
And I can say right now, speaking from some small expertise on Hitler, that this is historically inaccurate.
He did not, in fact, just live in some random Jefferson-style high-rise?
No.
Moving on up to the Sudetenland. Yeah, so here's the thing about the show. There is no premise of historical accuracy whatsoever. No one speaks with a German accent. There's almost no references to Nazism or World War II at all, except that the main character is made up as Hitler with a mustache, but he's wearing like an Argyle sweater, like a 50s sitcom dad.
Wow.
And the whole thing is just insanely faithfully modeled after The Honeymooners or I Love Lucy, some American, aggressively American 50s sitcom.
Right.
So Hitler does not talk in a German accent. He talks like Jackie Gleason. Like Hitler comes in, he's like, "Hi, honey, I'm home." And then he finds out that she's burned dinner or whatever, and he's like, "Whoa, one of these days, Ava! It's insane. The neighbors are they're essentially played like the Mertzes, Fred and Ethel Mertz.
Yeah.
From I Love Lucy.
Except there is a little bit, and it's funny because I never really thought of the Jeffersons as being an evolution of the Honeymooners, but I guess all subsequent sitcoms are basically the Honeymooners with some minor modification.
I guess I thought of the Jeffersons because it's an apartment dwelling sitcom.
Well, but also Jefferson was the first like black racist on television, right? George really didn't like his stupid white neighbors. And there were all these comedic situations where his like super honky next door neighbors would come over and borrow a cup of sugar. And George Jefferson was sort of confronted with like, because he had moved uptown,
right?
Confronted with these dumb whites that he had spent his whole life kind of.
And it doesn't just flip the Archie Bunker script because, you know, George Jefferson kind of struts.
Yeah.
You know, he's a preening peacock.
Right.
You know, he's not some...
And is Hitler also a preening
peacock? He's
not grumpy.
No, Hitler is very much the beleaguered husband, you know, the slow burn kind of Jackie Gleason, Ava, you know, because he tells her not to tell the neighbors that Neville Chamberlain is coming over. And she's very impressed. The plot makes no sense. Ava Braun is very impressed that Neville Chamberlain, one of the most powerful men in Europe, is coming over to our little apartment. Honey, you're essentially married to Hitler, you know?
Right.
Wait, they were not married in 38, right?
They were not married until four hours before they killed themselves in the Hitler bunker.
Right, not the Archie bunker.
No.
This is the second most beloved sitcom bunker after Edith.
No, they were not married, and Hitler concealed their relationship. And I think that we now understand that Hitler's one true love was his cousin.
Oh, I guess I didn't know any of this. This is not. It must not be true because it is not covered in the pilot episode of "Heil, Honey, I'm Home."
Well, this is part of his dark secret. He was in love with his much younger cousin who committed suicide, and Ava was part of that love triangle because he was also seeing Ava at the time, and there's some suspicion that his cousin committed suicide out of jealousy or heartbrokenness.
His cousin is female.
Yes.
Does he try to dress Ava up like her, like Jimmy Stewart in Vertigo or anything?
Interesting. I don't have that much insight into Hitler's
sexual psyche,
love life.
I feel like I should be on the writing staff of Heil, Honey, I'm Home. I got tons of ideas.
I just can't. As you're describing it, I cannot get inside the mind of the writers and showrunner.
Right.
To see, like, why is this?
Why does this exist?
Yeah, why did Hitler? I get it, like, a sitcom with Hitler. I get that pitch.
A hitcom.
A hitcom. Yeah, Hitlercom.
You're trying to get the L in there, and I don't know if it can be done.
Hitlercom. Hitlercom actually sounds like a modern corporation that deals in technology services, right?
It sounds like some kind of nerd convention. Yeah, I just went to Hitlercom.
But what, as they were fleshing it out, they had to arrive really quickly at the place where it was like, oh, this is stupid. But they just kept going.
It's the kind of thing that you could easily see working as a sketch.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this 1990 is kind of a boom time in you know, newly outré sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that word right?
Yeah.
Is it outré?
I would say outré.
Does it have an accent over the E?
There is an accent aigu over the E.
Then I guess it's outré. Because, you know, SNL is in some kind of very fertile boom time. Right. It's the Dana Carvey, John Lovitz, Phil Hartman years.
We also have Living Color.
And Living Color is just about to turn sketch comedy on its head. Very much funny. The first season of Living Color, to me, is funnier than any single SNL season.
It's really great. What about Kids in the Hall? What?
Kids in the Hall, I believe, is also contemporaneous.
Yeah.
And Conan O'Brien is about to come on the air in 93 and just start to do crazy high concept sketches.
Right.
You know, and his writers include like Robert Smigel and Louis C.K. and this whole new generation.
How about Mr. Show? That came a little later.
That's later 90s, yeah, I want to say. What year did that start? Like 96?
It feels mid 90s.
Maybe it's earlier than that. Anyway, so like you can definitely see SNL doing a funny gag where Hitler is a sitcom dad, right?
A sort of funny gag. Yeah, with Dana Carvey playing Hitler.
It's like a 115 sketch, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not the strongest sketch. But can you imagine trying to sustain it for 13 episodes?
Well, and are they speaking with American accents?
Yeah, they speak with these I looked this up. The Ava Brown actress is Canadian. The rest are all British actors. But they all speak with these 50s New York accents. Like,
what?
Like Arnie Goldenstein is essentially Fred Mertz or Norton from The Honeymooners.
This is bananas.
And so Neville Chamberlain comes over and he's very condescending to Hitler.
Does the actor look like Neville Chamberlain?
He looks quite a bit like Neville Chamberlain. He's got the mustache. And he's, oh, you've been a naughty boy invading the Sudetenland. We don't want to make sure you're not a naughty boy.
And does Hitler like have a naughty boy side? Is he like pleased with himself?
He is a little bit like I don't know who's the TV character, like maybe a Oliver Hardy or something.
Right, or a Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah, except he's not conniving, really. He does seem like he's mischievous.
Right.
You know, like,
he's got his hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah, and he's always dreaming of, you know, the only time there's any Nazi or World War II related content at all is when Hitler occasionally has daydreams of invading Poland. You know, that's just sort of their punchline.
I mean, I have daydreams about invading Poland.
Don't we all? But we know not to bring them up when the Chamberlains are over.
Right, sure, of course.
And there's a whole plot line where Neville Chamberlain has brought the Munich Agreement to be signed, where Hitler will promise he won't be a naughty boy anymore. And it accidentally gets stuck in the icebox for some reason. And they can't read it. So instead of saying peace in our time, they pull it out of the fridge and they're all saying peas in brine?
Yeah.
No. It says peaches in tins.
Uh-huh.
So it's all this hilarious,
because if you put
two Ronnie's wordplay.
If you put a piece of paper in the freezer, it immediately smears whatever ink is.
Into other food-related words.
So this is all happening in the pilot episode? Or is Neville Chamberlain a regular guest on the show?
No, this is I think he's a guest star. And not to spoil anything, but it turns out this was the only episode that ever aired.
What? No.
A tragedy, right?
They never... It's the only episode that aired, but are you aware of them having filmed any further episodes?
Yes. Apparently there are 7 to 8 other episodes. Whoa. That were taped.
But are they just like The Day the Clown Cried and no one's seen them? I mean, are scripts around?
I think scripts are around. I think they're actually, a lot of these, even that late, the British were just copying over their sitcoms and reusing the tapes. But I think tapes do survive of this.
Wow.
They've never been widely seen, mostly I think because no one wants that.
Right. Right. Even the weird obsessives are like, nah, I think I'll pass on Heil Honey, I'm Home.
There wasn't much of backlash, interestingly.
It just got canceled because it was terrible?
There was, it is terrible. So Jeff Atkinson has said that they would get studio audiences in. It was filmed before a live studio audience. The main joke is not Nazis. The main joke is American sitcoms of the 50s.
Right.
So it's all just dressed to the hilt. The laughter sounds very canned. There's even a little crawl at the top of the episode that says that this was just found in the vaults of legendary American TV executive Brandon Thalberg.
What an interesting conceit.
Right. Maybe because they knew that otherwise people would be like, why is a sitcom about Hitler airing?
Right.
You need the distancing.
Oh, sure. Of course. It would have been much funnier in the mid-50s.
This makes the joke even weirder, though, that really they just wanted to do a parody of American 50s sitcoms.
Yeah.
And yet they were like, oh, and here's how we'll plus it. What if the dad is Hitler? Like, why would you do that?
So can you give me some insight into what else was on British television at the time? I mean, I know there were a lot of legacy shows that had been running for 15 years, but what else was on British TV in 1990?
Interestingly, I think that's what led to the monumental historic creation of Heil, Honey, I'm Home. Mm. Satellite TV was very new then. Just for the benefit of our future listeners who will not believe this, as late as 1990, we were essentially still in kind of this media monoculture where in the States, for example, there were three TV channels and you watched whatever was on and it probably wasn't good.
Right. Like Fox was brand new.
That's exactly what's going on at this time in the US. I think 1989, The Simpsons debut. So Fox is only a couple years old.
And it was the first time we'd had a fourth channel that wasn't PBS, a fourth commercial TV channel.
Because you would just watch, you know, something terrible could be on. Empty Nest, some random situation comedy starring Richard Mulligan, a guy nobody likes or cares about, as a doctor in Florida, a job nobody likes or cares about. And 45 million people would watch this every night because it was there,
right,
you know?
Right, it was it.
And that explains, actually, now that I think about it, a lot about American TV, because the jokes, you know, the goal was just to keep people from changing the channel.
Right. Because there were two other shows they could be watching.
Yeah. So never, don't make this very good. Just never make it bad enough that anyone would care enough to press the button.
Sure. ALF was on TV.
Exactly.
ALF was a show about a domestic situation comedy, except the Jackie Gleason character was a foam puppet portraying an alien that liked to eat cats.
He ate cats. That's his only... And that's sort of the sitcom thing where the character has one thing, you know?
Right.
Alf likes to eat cats. Liz Lemon likes junk food. The judge on Night Court is into Mel Torme for some reason, you know? And that's kind of how Hitler is here. He has none of Hitler's qualities, except that he's really into invading countries. France, Poland, you know? That's his one sitcom trait.
So, and what... Was this the BBC?
No, this is an upstart outfit called Galaxy. Sky TV has recently brought satellite television to the British Isles.
Uh-huh.
And they already have all the good stuff. They have all the soccer you want to watch. They probably have HBO and MTV ported over from stateside.
Was that a Rupert Murdoch joint?
Yes. As you know, people in the future will no doubt be aware of the date that Murdoch launched his satellites, because that was the day he became the Bond villain who eventually ended civilization.
Sure, this was the day the fuse got lit, and I'm sure future generations will have all of that. It'll be like the stock market crash of 1929, sure, except of culture.
It's the Reichstag fire,
yeah.
To use a Heil, Honey, I'm Home related metaphor. Yes, so before then, he's just some Australian newspaper editor, I guess, and after that, he's, you know, the guy who begins to control all the world's media and eventually lead to the nuclear conflagration. But there's this upstart service called BSB, I think it's British Satellite Broadcasting or something, and they decide they're going to play Fox. So if you'll recall, Fox's brand early on was to be kind of the edgy, direct, earthy channel that would give you The Simpsons saying, eat my shorts,
right,
and Al Bundy doing toilet jokes.
Right.
You know?
Right. It was rock and roll.
Right. And there was a lot of pearl clutching in the media about how the media has fallen.
Sure,
now.
The decline of standards. And what was this? People are going to start flying on airplanes in sweatpants.
Look at these vulgarians now, you know, Al Bundy and Peg.
He puts his hand down the front of his pants
when he watches TV.
Ugh.
Can you imagine?
I'm still disgusted by it.
Can you imagine Danny Thomas doing that? I can't.
So BSB is the Fox of Britain?
Right. And I think my idea is that it's part of a concerted plan to do these kind of faux, edgy kind of things and get some media.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a no-brainer for them to greenlight a sitcom about Adolf Hitler.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, that just jumps over every level of putting your hand down your pants and skateboarding disrespectfully and gets right to Nazis.
Right. It's amazing to think, because now, in our contemporary time of 2018, there is no way at a 1,000 levels that this show could get greenlit. And it doesn't feel like greenlighting that show is a thing from the past to me, as much as it feels like it's a thing from an alternate future.
It's ominous.
They felt like that was where we were headed, like culturally, that nothing was sacred anymore. But somehow between 1990 and 2018, we have either gone back for a little while or have taken a different course to the future where now everything is sacred and there would be no way you could do a show that was that. It's not even that it's politically incorrect. It just seems bonkers.
Yeah, and I think particularly because the ideology and the iconography is Nazi-related.
Right.
You know, that's something that I'm sure the stakes seemed very low in the 1990s. You know, like, you know, well, luckily, here's one thing that's never going to be popular again. The National Socialism, you know? So why not make it a hilarious punchline? It's been totally defanged by... It's been discredited for 45 years.
Right, there are no Nazis anymore.
Yeah, in 1990, it's very safe. In 2017, you put Hitler in a sitcom, and it's got all kinds of unpleasant associations because there's now some controversy as to whether or not Hitler was a pretty great guy with some good ideas.
Right. I don't think there's any controversy about that still, but yeah, right.
Not in our listening audience or in this room.
Right. And I think probably the number of actual Nazi sympathizers now versus 1990, it's probably remained constant. It's just that we have much more access to their contemptible thought because there's Twitter.
Sure. They have a better platform.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water, but you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
So how did this show end?
Well, the first episode ends with Neville Chamberlain going back to England. But what you're saying is, how does the show get canceled?
Yeah.
Why did we never see the subsequent episodes with Goebbels and Stalin guest starring and Adolf and Eva trying to kill their neighbors, the Goldensteins?
It seems like one episode wouldn't be enough for a network to be able to gauge whether they had a potential hit. And certainly they didn't cancel it because of questions of taste.
There was a little bit of that. So first of all, studio audiences didn't get it at all. They taped it twice, once with a young college audience, once with an older audience. The college audience thought Nazis were funny, but didn't get the 50 sitcom references.
Okay.
The older audience understood that it was a parody of 50 sitcoms, but didn't think Nazis were funny because they'd been bombed.
Sure.
You know, there's kind of this thing where for a lot of British people, maybe it's safe to laugh at Nazis because, you know, they won, you know, stiff upper lip and sense of humor got them through the Blitz. And
it's good to laugh at them, but if they are like
vanquished
and also like made ridiculous.
Yes. And I think that was the idea. Like, we're doing the same thing Bugs Bunny and Chaplin did. You know, we're making Hitler seem goofy. And it's not actually all that clear in the pilot. Like, Hitler is not the target of all the fun.
Right.
But I guess it goes with this British idea that humor should be cheeky, you know, that you should be mildly disrespectful to authority. And apparently, in this case, they expanded that to include the Nazi High Command. We should just tweak their noses a bit, you know. We should be a little rude.
But not too much.
No, you don't want to have a satirical edge.
Right.
You know, that's not what cheek is all about. So they had a problem getting anyone to laugh. And I think there were some quotes from Jewish groups when it came out saying that, you know, this is not a subject for comedy. But the quote from the Jewish organization I saw is that I imagine very few intelligent people will watch it once they see a few seconds of it. So it looks like even the Anti-Defamation League knew they did not have much to worry about.
Right. They were like, okay, this will die on its own.
Hitler just shot himself in the foot. This is the sitcom equivalent of invading Russia. Basically,
he shot himself in the foot as a precursor to shooting himself in the head.
So what really killed the show was not some outcry. Like it was not a social media outcry like you would have today. You know, today, 8 hours later, that show would be gone once the ball got rolling.
Sure.
And the network would pretend that they had no idea how this had ever happened.
Yeah, they'd be Hitler shamed and the show would be canceled.
What happened in this case was Rupert Murdoch's Sky TV Leviathan buys out Galaxy. He wants the competition. He wants their TV license.
Whoa.
So they merge to form, you know, the new Sky Television, Sky UK, whatever it is.
This was back when all of this could happen over the course of 24 hours. He's like, yeah, I saw that Heil Hitler, I'm home. I want the whole network. I'll take it.
No, what happened was, you know, he just wanted their TV license. He did not want the competition.
Right.
So over the fall, after they aired the pilot, but before the new episodes were scheduled to start airing in December or January, this massive corporate merger takes place. And the new Sky TV does not need this fake, edgy Al Bundy brand.
Uh-huh.
And the real victim here, the real casualty is Hitler-themed comedy.
So it just got canceled as part of a corporate merger. Because they were like, it was like Alaska Airlines buying Virgin. They were like, oh, we're just going to change all the signs.
Can you imagine them calling in the guy who plays Hitler? I'm sorry, we already have Rupert Murdoch. We're going to have to let you go.
Well, and so there is actually one example of this layer of mistake or this kind of mistake happening like about a decade later, which is the sitcom That's My Bush. Which was a sitcom with George Bush, George W. Bush, as like the beleaguered dad, right?
It's all the same jokes.
In a sitcom, but he was the sitting president, and it debuted on September 10th, 2001. Is that correct?
Is that true?
I think it is. I think it debuted immediately before September 11th, and George W. Bush as this like, laughable, bumbling dad was suddenly not funny at all.
It aired back in April, actually. It's a pre 9/11 phenomenon.
But and so there were, I actually remember seeing episodes of it on the Comedy Channel or whatever.
I saw promos for it.
That's My Bush.
And I guess I don't understand the controversy about it. Maybe in the wake of Bush v. Gore, because we'd had bumbling Chevy Chase as Gerald Ford for decades.
It was. I think the initial controversy was just that it was disrespectful of him because it portrayed him not just as bumbling like Ford, but as like a village idiot. But then after 9/11, when it was no longer possible to say anything mocking about any aspect of the presidency or American government or the military, it was, I think, immediately canceled or just, there are probably 20 episodes of that sitting in a can somewhere.
That's what I'd buy a DVD of. There's actually a 90s American analog, which I only vaguely remembered. Can you tell me anything about the beloved sitcom, The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer?
I can tell you nothing about it.
So I have the vaguest memory of this. Let's see. It lasted 9 shows, but only 4 were aired. Mm-hmm. Heil, Honey, I'm Home Syndrome. It's about a black English gentleman who serves as Abraham Lincoln's valet.
Really?
So it's set in the Lincoln White House and it's got sitcom tropes, but it's a slavery sitcom basically.
Wow.
With, you know, abolition and emancipation proclamation and Civil War jokes.
So it really does feel like an alternate future
where you could just,
where this
that.
Was the level of irony. I mean, because in the 90s, when we were both in our youth, irony was the only way we were really dealing with uncomfortable topics. We just got like real eye-rolly about everything. And then I guess 9/11 was the beginning of the new earnestness.
I don't think it lasted though. You see all those quotes from September and October 2001 where everybody and their dog is saying that irony is now dead.
Right.
And everything's going to be emo forever. You know, and the comedy shows were off the air for like 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, right, right. But there was a tonal shift that now feels like...
Sure. And it was the end of there's the end of the end of history.
Right.
You know, there's now higher stakes.
Right.
We're back in a world with peril and not a clear, obvious narrative arc toward goodness. It's the same thing that happened in 2016.
Well, I'm not sure that feels better.
It's also, you have to remember this was happening at a time where the family sitcom still was the dominant form of comedy, which is not true at all in our day, and maybe is true for you, future listeners. Maybe
the sitcom has returned.
The family domestic sitcom is huge in your time, and you do massive festivals with live reenactments of of Make Room for Daddy episodes.
It may be true that future listeners have only developed 3 channels worth of material.
Maybe 20th century sitcoms are all that survived, and they have tried to reconstruct civilization just based on what they see on Who's the Boss and Growing Pains. Like all their buildings have only 3 walls. They're just open on the 4th side. It's incredibly cold, you know, if global warming hasn't caught up yet.
Well, with that in mind, future listeners, nanu nanu. And that concludes Heil, Honey, I'm Home. entry 577 PR1413, certificate number 42615, in the omnibus. In the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, tweets of ours are archived at Omnibus Project. Our respective handles were at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. I also continue to maintain an Instagram account under my same name. Our address for email, which was a popular form of written electronic communication, was theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
Future residents of Earth, our voices come to you from your distant past. As a result, you have knowledge that we do not know. We don't know how long our civilization is going to survive, our interregnum, if you will. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may be delayed indefinitely, may never come. But if the worst does come soon, this recording, like every recording we make, may be our final word to you. But we certainly hope that Providence will allow us to be with you again soon for another entry in the omnibus.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.